ज्ञानचमिरन्धस्य जलाञ्जलाशुलकया चक्षुस्मिलिताञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टां स्थपितां जनभूतले स्वयंरूपकदामायां ददति सा पुनर्जिता वंशकौपुत्रुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च पतितरं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. With the earlier chapter in the fifth canto, earlier chapters rather, starting in chapter 17, no, even 16. In chapter 16, after speaking of Priyavrata and how the wheels of his chariot made such huge indentations, that defined various islands and seas. So that description took place in the first chapter of the fifth canto. Then following that, after the descendants of Priyavrata were described in the 15th chapter, you have to take the little spoon out, otherwise it's too noisy. There we go. So in the 15th chapter, after the descendants of Priyavrata were described, then Maharaj Prickett asked more about Bhumandala, which had to do with the rolling wheels of Maharaj Priyavrata's chariot, in which, as the second verse of the 16th chapter described, in which the seven oceans came into being, and also, by definition, practically speaking, seven islands as well. So, starting in the 16th chapter, a description of Bhumandala was given, and in the remainder of the chapter there will be some information given about the universal structure. So in chapter 16, 17, and 18, there's a description of Jambadvipa. In chapter 17, in relationship to the descent of the river Ganges. And then in chapter 18 and 19, the residents of Jambadvipa offer prayers. Now Jambadvipa is the center island in Bhumandala. And it is divided into several parts. I can't remember if it is seven or eight. Anyone? Seven? Thank you. Yes, I also think it's seven. So it's divided into seven parts. And similarly, almost all of the other islands, there are seven islands that were created by the wheels of the chariot of Priyavrata, and those seven islands, including Jambadvipa, were given rulership over. Those seven islands were given to the seven sons of Priyavrata, and each of those seven islands, Jambadvipa being the central island, was divided into seven sectors. Almost all of them. I think there's one that was only divided into two sectors, because each of the sons of Priyavrata, that they themselves had seven sons, and the different islands were divided into seven sectors, and each of the seven islands were divided into seven sectors, and each of the seven sons of the sons of Priyavrata, each of the seven sons of Priyavrata, their sons ruled the different segments of the island that their father was allotted to their father by Priyavrata. So in chapter 17 is the center of the river Ganges, 16 is a description of Jambadvipa, and 18 and 19 was practically speaking about the residents the prayers often offered by the residents of Jambudvip. In each part of Jambudvip, there is a predominating person. And each of those persons worship the Lord. And the Lord is worshipped in different forms in the islands of Jambudvip. And those prayers were quite wonderful, establishing how the Lord is the protector. And ultimately, of course, He's the maintainer. And ultimately, we should give ourselves completely to Him. So that's really the essence of the Bhagavatam's message in this segment, describing the Lord's relationship with the universe. In one tape I heard, Prabhupada was explaining that we are not so interested in understanding the universe. What we are interested in is developing love for Krishna. So for myself, it's far beyond me to understand what the universe is like, and even paying attention to the descriptions of the Bhagavatam, I can't put the pieces together. Greater devotees than myself are doing that, in the process of doing that in their own way. So I won't emphasize exactly what the universe looks like, what Bhumanda looks like, etc. But what we will try to explain is basically we'll echo what Prabhupada explains in his purports, and which are basically simple explanations of the prayers that different residents of the different islands give. So we're now up to chapter 20, and chapter 20 is entitled Studying the Structure of the Universe. So there, from now until basically the end of this canto, actually, as we said, it started before in chapter 16, when the description of Jambudvip was given. Then there is a description of the universe. A universe was given. So now, and that description centered on Jambudvip, but now it's going to expand. In chapter 20, there will be a study of the structure of the universe. In 21, the movements of the sun are described. In 22, the orbits of the planets. In 23, the Shishumara planetary system, which means basically the Milky Way and Dhruva Loka. That's described. And 24, the subterranean heavenly planet. So you're going really from Bhumandala stretches as a plate almost in the mid-universe. And then, and after describing the different orbits of the planets, which take up parts of the universe, or orbit around the universe, then the subterranean heavenly planets, which are the lower parts of the universe, are described. It's an interesting chapter, and there's an interesting analysis really at the end. What are subterranean heavenly planets? Subterranean implies, of course, it's below the earth, and it means generally the sub things that are subterranean are dark and hellish, but yet these are heavenly. So be interesting to see how they fit into the universal structure. Then in chapter 25, there's the glories of Lord Anantadev. So you're even further down into the bottom of the universe. And then going down still further, and the Shishumara planetary systems are the upper ones, and there'll be a description, if I remember correctly, of the heavenly planets, and even above the heavenly planets. And then in the 26th chapter, there'll be a description of the hellish planets, where souls are sent to suffer. And these are more or less the pits, the bottoms of the universe, where there's great suffering. And this will be a lead into, and that's the final chapter in Canto 5, 26 is the final chapter. And this will lead to the sixth canto. So according to my calculation, we'll find out whether I'm right or not. There'll be six more classes in completing the fifth canto, and then, Krishna willing, we'll begin canto six. So anyway, now in chapter 20, which is entitled Studying the Structure of the Universe, we're going to approach this a little differently. I'll speak some, and then we're not going to read all the verses. What I'll do is read the summary that Prabhupada's included at the beginning of the chapter, and we'll describe very, very simply and what's being described here. We'll add on that a little bit, what this Bhumandala looks like and what's going on there. And then we'll read some of the purports. We'll go over some of the verses and read Prabhupada's purports and comment on that. And we'll see what the point that Prabhupada is emphasizing here in this chapter. So basically, we've already heard that the central island is Jambudvip, but we haven't heard much more than that. After this island, I'll just start reading and then we'll speak a little bit as we go along. Prabhupada's summary of this 20th chapter. In this chapter, there is a description of various islands, beginning with Plakshadvip. So there are seven islands. The first one, or the central one, is Jambudvip. Then there is an ocean surrounding that, and that ocean, or the size, or the diameter, I think it's actually I'm not sure if it's the diameter, but anyway, the breadth of Jambudvip is 800,000 miles. And then surrounding that, there is an ocean of salt water. And that ocean of salt water is the same size as the breadth of Jambudvip, so it's also 800,000 miles. And then surrounding that, now these again are the islands and the oceans made by the wheels of Priyavrata Maharaja's chariot. So surrounding that, one after another, a series of islands and oceans, islands and oceans, islands and oceans. So one after another, there is the next one out from Jambudvip is Plakshadvip. And there is an ocean around that, and that is an ocean of sugarcane juice. And then Plakshadvip, so the saltwater ocean is 800,000 miles, the same size as Jambudvip. And then the island of Plakshadvip, which is surrounding that, is double the size of the Jambudvip island and the saltwater ocean. It's double the size, so it's 1,600,000 miles. And surrounding Plakshadvip and the ocean of sugarcane juice is another island. So Plakshadvip is surrounded by an ocean of sugarcane juice, which is the same size as Plakshadvip, 1,600,000 miles. Then surrounding that is another island, which is double the size of both Plakshadvip and the sugarcane juice ocean, and that's called Samalidvip. And there's an ocean of liquor, which is the same size. So one after another, it goes from island, which is of one size, then to ocean, which is the same size as the island. Then it doubles in size for the next island, which is the same size as the ocean that surrounds that, which doubles in size for the same island, for the next island, and the ocean surrounding that. So in this way, there's island, ocean, island, ocean, for seven islands and seven oceans. Now the names of the islands are, and we'll hear them one after another, is Jambudvip, Plakshadvip, Samalidvip, Kushadvip, Krunchadvip, and Shakadvip. And in each one of those islands, it's surrounded by a different ocean. First is the salt water, sugarcane juice, liquor, ghee, milk and yogurt. And in each one of those islands, there is one of Priyavrata's sons is in charge. And he has seven sons. Most of them have seven sons and divided into seven parts. And one has only two parts. And that's divided amongst the grandson of Priyavrata. So then, after that, on each of those islands, the predominating person, the ruler, he is worshipping one form or one demigod. And that's what we're going to read, the prayers of the worshippers of the demigods, and see if we can reach a conclusion about what the main point that Prabhupada is making in his description of this chapter. So on the first island, the second island of Plakshadweep, the sun god is worshipped. And then in the island of Somalidweep, the moon is worshipped. And then the next island, which is Kushadweep, fire is worshipped. And in the next island, Krunchadweep, water is worshipped. And then air, and then Brahma. So these are all different demigods that are being worshipped on each of the islands. So we'll read. So that's the basic idea of this structure over here of Bhumandala. And then there's a little bit more after that. So it's stretching out a huge distance. And in each island there are rivers and there are mountains. Okay, we'll read. In this chapter, there is a description of various islands, beginning with Plakshadweep, that's the one outside of Jambadweep, and the oceans that surround them. There is also description of the location and dimensions of the mountain known as Lokaloka. And Lokaloka is the furthest island beyond which there is no one residing. The island of Plakshadweep, which is twice as broad as Jambadweep, is surrounded by an ocean of salt water. The master of this island is Idma Jiva, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. The island is divided into seven regions, each with a mountain and a large river. The second island is called Somalidweep. It is surrounded by an ocean of liquor and it is 3,200,000 miles wide, twice as wide as Plakshadweep. The master of this island is Jagyabahu, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. Like Plakshadweep, this island is also divided into seven regions, each with a mountain and a very large river. The inhabitants of this island worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Chandratma. The third island, that means the moon, the third island, which is surrounded by an ocean of clarified butter and is also divided into seven regions, is called Kushadweep. Its master is Hiranyaksha, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata, and its inhabitants worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Agni, the fire god. The width of this island is 6,400,000 miles, or in other words, twice the width of Somalidweep. So what we're seeing here, as Prabhupada's explaining, as he's summarizing this chapter of the Bhagavatam, that in every island, a demigod is being worshipped, but not worshipped as independent of the Lord, but being worshipped in the consciousness that this is an energy, a potency, a power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the moon, the sun, they all have their own specific manifestation of the Lord's potency. But the Lord Himself, ultimately Krishna Himself, is the reservoir of all these potencies that are manifest in the material world and manifest through these demigods. So one after another, these islands are being described, and the worshipable lord of those islands, who is a demigod in charge of one of the natural functions within the world, but who is getting his power from the Supreme. So if the demigod or if someone is appreciating the power that is some natural power that is manifest in this world, and everyone naturally should appreciate these powers that are the sun, the moon, the stars, the air. We are dependent upon them. We use them continuously. So naturally we should appreciate these things and the powers that make them work. And that naturally should lead us to appreciating the source of that power, and ultimately that appreciation should lead to surrender to that person, because we see how tiny we are, how dependent we are on these very powerful elements within the material world, and then the source of that power, we're still more dependent upon him. And how many energies he has, we cannot even estimate. So this is sort of the general point that Prabhupada will lead us to within this chapter. In one sense, more of the same thing. That our business is to surrender to Krishna. We are tiny, he is great. If we look in the world and we appreciate the natural forces, we should understand that those natural forces are just aspects of his greatness. And they are fully dependent upon him. In this world, in the 21st century, people generally don't worship demigods or don't think of themselves as worshipper of demigods. But yet, they worship so many powerful people, and especially when one is trying to gain something in the material world, one finds that he has to deal with the people who are more powerful than him and extract blessings from such a person. Blessings in the sense of his well wishes, because if powerful people in the material world become your enemy, you can't advance yourself. You can't advance yourself. So you have to make friends with the powers that be. You have to socialize with them. You have to let them become fond of you. This is the way the world works. So although people may not accept demigods, but yet they accept this principle of demigods, that there are beings higher than me that I must please if I want to be happy. And the same over principle still applies, as Prabhupada's explaining in relationship to the demigods, that behind the demigod, who's giving the demigod the power, the sun, the moon, etc., the air, is the Supreme Lord, the source of all power, the Shaktiman. And similarly, behind every powerful person, where is that power coming from? In one second, that power can be removed. In another second, someone suddenly becomes powerful, rises up, becomes president from nowhere, and then controls this and that, and then people will come to him and smile at him. And it's such a peculiar thing that when a wealthy, powerful person goes somewhere, he never has to pay for anything. You'd imagine that he has so much money and so much power that he doesn't mind paying for anything. But it's only the poor people who pay for things when they go places. The rich people, when very, very wealthy people say, "Oh, you're here. Please be my guest. Please do this. Please do that. Oh, let me buy you this. Let me give you this. Let me give you this gift." So a person gets put in power and suddenly everyone has to come to him and subjugate themselves to him to get something from them. And it's always motivated. They always want something from a person of greater power. So where is that person getting his power from? Death is going to wipe it away. Birth has brought him into this world. It's dependent upon his health. All these things. It's dependent upon on so many things. And these, and his luck, his fortune. What is his fortune? What is his luck? This is his fate, his karma, and ultimately all this is under the control of Krishna. So whether one accepts demigods consciously or doesn't accept demigods consciously, the principle is always accepted. Please someone more powerful to get some reward. So on each of the islands, these great personalities, the sons of Prithumaraj, they are worshipping the demigods in charge of the natural functioning. So the fourth island, Kunshadweep, which is surrounded by an ocean of milk, is 12,800,000 miles wide and is also divided, like the others, into seven regions, each with a large mountain and a large river. The master of this island is Gritaprishta, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. The inhabitants of this island worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of water. Water, how dependent upon all we are for water. So much so that when the scientists they send their rockets to other planets or moons, and when they can trace that there's water there, they say possibly there is life. For life, there must be water. So how dependent upon ultimately Krishna we are for our very life, for water, for the sun, for the moon, all these forces. And yet, we proudly and foolishly are proud. And because we're proud, we're foolish. And we think ourselves independent. I don't need anyone. This is a typical thought of a conditioned living entity alive during this time period. I don't need anyone. I depend on myself. I trust myself. Because people are so let down by having trusted others, and the others that they've trusted have not come up to their expectations. So people have given up their taking shelter consciously and willingly and happily of superiors, because everyone is so proud, we think that no one is superior. So this is foolish. We're so dependent, completely dependent. So before we can actually become devotees, we have to give up this pride and sense of independence. We're unconscious of it, but we breathe. We're not even aware of our breath. Imagine if we had to remember to breathe every how many times a minute? So 6, 7, 8 something times a minute. Imagine, and one day we get so involved in a good book that we forget to breathe, or something like that, or watch him. And then just imagine, we're so dependent. And Krishna's so kindly providing these things, these systems. The fifth island, Shakadweep, which is 25,600,000 miles wide, is surrounded by an ocean of yogurt. Its master is Medatiti, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. It is also divided into seven regions, each with a large mountain and a large river. Its inhabitants worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu, or air. The sixth island, Pushkaradip, which is twice as wide as the previous island, is surrounded by an ocean of clear water. Its master is Vitihotra, Another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. The island is divided in two by a large mountain named Manosotar. So that's the one island that there's only two parts. All the rest have seven parts. The inhabitants of this island worship Swayambhu, another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is Lord Brahma. Beyond Pushkadweep, there are two islands, one always lit by the sunshine and the other always dark. Between them is a mountain called Lokaloka, which is situated 1 billion miles from the edge of the universe. Lord Narayan, expanding his opulence, resides upon this mountain. The area beyond Lokaloka mountain is called Alokavash, and beyond Alokavash means the place where there's no people. And beyond Alokavash, so all before that it's inhabited, and after this Lokaloka mountain, there's Alokavash, or the division where there's no people. So before that mountain, it's inhabited, and after that mountain, it's not inhabited. So beyond Alokavash is the pure destination of persons who desire liberation. So this is speaking about going beyond the universe. So according to the modern scientists, they have no conception. They talk about this universe and its creation, etc. But they have no concept of many universes or beyond the universe because obviously they have no way of knowing about that. Vertically, the sun globe is situated just in the middle of the universe. Central, in Antariksha. Antariksha means outer space. The space between Bhurloka and Bhuvaloka. So it's higher. The sun plant, so this Jambadweep, or the Bhumandal that's being described, there's a plane, and the sun is above it in the universal structure. And it's between the Bhurloka and the Bhuvaloka. So these are different planetary systems. The distance between the sun and the circumference of Andagolak, the globe of the universe, is estimated to be 25 koti yojanas, or 2 billion miles. Because the sun enters the universe and divides the sky, it is known as Martanda. I'm not sure what that means. And because it is produced from Hiranyagarbha, the body of the Mahatattva, the body of the universal form, it is also called Hiranyagarbha. So that's Prabhupada's summary. Now we'll read some of the purports, some of the verses. First we'll read number 4. Text 4. It's actually 3 and 4. The seven islands, the Varshas, are named according to the names of those seven sons. So this is, we've just read this. Shiva, Yava, Subhadra, Shanta, Chema, Amrita, and Abai. In those seven tracts of land, there are seven mountains and seven rivers. This is I think, Somali Dweep, or the Plaksha Dweep. Yes, Plaksha Dweep. The mountains are named Manikuta, Vajrakuta, Indrasena, Jyotisman, Suparna, Haranya, Stiva, and Megamal. And the rivers are named Aruna, Nrimna, Anjira, Savitri, Suptavatta, Ritambara, and Satyambara. One can immediately be freed from material contamination by touching or bathing in those rivers. And the four castes of people who live in Plakshadweep, the Hansas, Patangas, Udvayanas, and Satyangas, purify themselves in that way. The inhabitants of Plakshadweep live for 1,000 years. They are beautiful like the demigods, and they also beget children like the demigods. By completely performing the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas, and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead as represented by the sun god, they attain the sun, which is a heavenly planet. So here in Prabhupada's purport, he explains that these living entities in this planetary system over here in this Plakshadweep, they perform the ritualistic Vedic ceremonies, and because of that, they attain the sun. They are purified by that, because according to how pure our consciousness is, we live in different realms. Now, this is true even for all of us. According to the purity of our consciousness or the impurity of our consciousness, we have different things that we enjoy. If our consciousness is very gross, our enjoyment will be gross. And we'll seek gross types of pleasures to enjoy. And that is what we want, and it's due to the grossness of the consciousness. Grossness of consciousness means, basically it means that we have a lot of passion and ignorance in the consciousness. And on the other hand, subtlety of consciousness is purity of consciousness. And someone who has pure, subtle consciousness, he's completely different. He has so much motive goodness in him. His life is completely different. He has fineness of taste. And therefore, his capacity to enjoy, because it is subtle, it is greater. This actually explains why we can't go to Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world now, and we can't even go to higher realms now. It's because our consciousness is not fine at this point. It's not subtle. And therefore we can't exist on those platforms. We can't be in the spiritual world because we have gross consciousness. And we see it for ourselves, how our consciousness, even in one day, it fluctuates 100 times, thousands of times. Sometimes it's quite subtle. And when the consciousness is subtle, that means there's motive goodness becomes dominant. And what happens immediately? One is happy and peaceful and self-satisfied. And at other times of the day, passion will come. And when one is full of passion, we're not satisfied. And the symptom of lack of satisfaction is desires. I want to do this and action and do this and do that and run after this and get this and I want. Means no satisfaction. Grosser. And then other times, our consciousness is impelled by the forces of ignorance, and all we can do is sleep, or we're angry. And what happens after, when you wake up after sleeping? Tendency is to get angry really easily, because it's dull, it's gross, dullness. So dullness, desiring, and self-satisfied ignorance, passion, goodness. So these personalities who live in Plakshadweep, through following the Vedic ceremonies, and if one performs these ceremonies, it's auspicious. And one can feel it. When one walks into an auspicious atmosphere, it feels completely different. If one walks into a room or a house that's dirty, it has a feel to it. If one walks into a room that's spotlessly cleansed, it has a feel to it. Auspicious, inauspicious. So these things exist clearly, even on our own level of realization. So by purifying their consciousness through following the Vedic rituals, the personalities of Plakshadweep, they purify their consciousness and make it, that means again, more subtle, and therefore they can attain a higher planet, the sun planet. So when they perform these ritualistic ceremonies, they're worshipping the sun, and they're getting a benediction from the sun to elevate their consciousness. But ultimately, Vedeschasavaraham eva vidyo, that it is Krishna himself. who is to be understood and through the Vedic rituals. And also, he is the ultimate enjoyer and he is the ultimate one. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. And he is the Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He is the controller and he is the one who gives the sun the power to benedict the living entities. He's the source of the sun's power. He's the source of all the demigods' power. So no demigod, no powerful person in this world or on higher, more subtle levels can be equal to or greater than the Lord, who is the source of everyone's power. So that was just something from that verse 4. Now I'll look at 5. Here is the prayers that they offer. Here is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Plakshadweep worship the Supreme Lord. Let us take shelter of the sun god, who is a reflection of Lord Vishnu, the all-expanding supreme personality of Godhead, the oldest of all persons. Vishnu is the only worshipable Lord. He is the Vedas, he is religion, and he is the origin of all auspicious and inauspicious results. Prabhupada explains in his purport. We'll read some of the purport. Srila Varagavacharya explains this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. The original cause of the cosmic manifestation must be the oldest person, because he's the source of the world, so therefore he must have existed prior to the world, and because he existed prior to the world, he's older than anyone in the world. And he must be therefore beyond, he must therefore beyond material transformation. If the forces of matter are being moved, and he is outside of matter, so he is beyond the forces of matter. If he creates matter, therefore he's not within the realm of matter, and he's beyond the forces of matter. And he is the enjoyer of all auspicious activities and is the cause of conditioned life and also liberation. So he is controlling the system of elevation and the system of conditioning and the system of freedom in the material world. The demigod Surya, who is characterized as a very powerful jiva, he's the sun god, or living entity, is a representation of one of the parts of his body. In other words, all the different natural forces, all the different demigods can be seen or understood as part of the universal body of the Lord. And through them, as we've already studied this in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, through them, that's how the Lord controls the material energy and the material universes, through these powerful living entities who are very pure and are known as demigods. We are naturally subordinate to powerful living entities, and therefore we can worship the various demigods as living beings who are powerful representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the worship of the sun god is recommended in this mantra, he is worshipped not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but as his powerful representative. And just at the end of the purport, people who are almost blind because of lusty desires are recommended to worship the demigods to have their material desires fulfilled. But actually, those desires are not fulfilled by the material demigods. Whatever the demigods do is done with the sanction of Lord Vishnu, of the Lord. People are too lusty. That's such an interesting wording Prabhupada uses. Blind. People are almost blind because of lusty desires. When one's desires are very strong, he doesn't see properly. Once one is full of desires, he loses all his discrimination, and something that is ugly might seem very beautiful if one's desires are strong enough. So blind due to these lusty desires, and that's what happens. One loses one's intelligence and one loses one's vision. So whatever the demigods do is done with the sanction of Lord Vishnu. People who are too lusty worship various demigods instead of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the super soul of all living entities. But ultimately it's Lord Vishnu they worship, because he is the super soul of all the demigods. He is the force, the power behind the demigod's own power, as he is the power behind every powerful living entity's power. In 13, we'll read a little of that. Outside the ocean of liquor is another island known as Kushadweep, which is 800,000 yojana, 6,400,000 miles wide, twice as wide as the ocean of liquor. As Salmalidweep is surrounded by a liquor ocean, Kushadweep is surrounded by an ocean of liquid ghee as broad as the island itself. On Kushadweep there are clumps of kusha grass, from which the island takes its name. This kusha grass, which was created by the demigods by the will of the Supreme Lord, appears like a second form of fire, but with very, very mild and pleasing flames. Its young shoots illuminate all directions, so it appears as if fire. And here's Prabhupada's purport. From the description in this verse, we can make an educated guess about the nature of the flames on the moon. Like the sun, the moon must also be full of flames, because without flames there cannot be illumination. The flames on the moon, however, unlike those of the sun, on the sun, must be mild and pleasing. This is our conviction, Prabhupada explains. The modern theory that the moon is full of dust is not accepted in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. In regard to this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Shushashpani Sukumala Shikas Tesham Rochiza. The kusa grass illuminates all directions, but its flames are very mild and pleasing. This gives some idea of the flames existing on the moon. So Prabhupada was very strong decrying some of the scientific conclusions about, for instance, the composition of the moon. Very powerful on these points. I'm very much against and in the face and challenging the contemporary belief systems based on the scriptures, the Shastra, the Bhagavatam, and his own conviction, powerful conviction. Then we'll read something from text 18. Here is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Kushadweep worship the fire god. O fire god, you are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, and you carry to him all the offerings of sacrifice. Fire is it's a particular type of energy, and it has an attractiveness. People are naturally attracted by fire. People like to sit around a campfire and just look at the fire. It's just because it's a subtle energy. It's very attractive. So that energy, the potency of that energy is this Agni, the fire god, and as part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, you carry to him all the offerings of sacrifices. Therefore, we request you to offer the Supreme Personality of Godhead the sacrificial yajnik ingredients we are offering the demigods, for the Lord is the real enjoyer. So they're saying, again, that it is the Lord who is ultimately the purpose of sacrifices, and it is him ultimately who is giving the demigods their power, and it is him, and the demigods are making the material energy work in the material world, and we are dependent on them, and therefore we are ultimately dependent on the Lord. Prabhupada explains in his purport. The demigods are servants who assist the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one worships the demigods as servants of the Supreme carry the sacrificial offerings to the Lord like tax collectors collecting revenue from the citizens and bringing it to the government's treasury. The demigods cannot accept the sacrificial offerings. They simply carry the offerings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. Then that was 18. Now we'll just look at 28. The inhabitants of Shakadweep worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu, or air. So not that the Lord is air, but air is the air, and the potency of air that we are all dependent on is not separate from Him. Not pantheism, but monotheism. That nothing is independent of the Lord. So the worshippers, the inhabitants of Sakatip, worship the air, the demigod. They worship the Lord through His energy of Vayu, or the air. O Supreme Person, situated as the super soul within the body, You direct the various actions of the different airs, such as prana, and thus You maintain all living entities. O Lord, O super soul of everyone, O controller of the cosmic manifestation under whom everything exists, may You protect us from all dangers. So the purpose of yoga is ultimately to see, as the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita explains, is to meditate on the Lord within the heart. And part of that yoga practice is called pranayama, or the breathing exercises. So by the breathing exercises of pranayama, air, the breath is controlled. And by the breaths being controlled, the mind is controlled. And when the mind is controlled, it can be focused wherever we want. And by focusing on the heart, one can see the super soul, the Lord who is living in everyone's heart. So Prabhupada's short purport here. Through the mystic yoga practice called pranayama, the yogi controls the airs within the body to maintain the body in a healthy condition. In this way, the yogi comes to the point of trance and tries to see the super soul within the core of his heart. Pranayama is the means to attain samadhi, trance, in order to fully absorb oneself in seeing the Supreme Lord as antaryami, the super soul within the core of the heart. Next we'll read 33. I think that's also a prayer. Lord Brahma is known as Karmamaya, the form of ritualistic ceremonies. Because by performing ritualistic ceremonies, or the Vedic ceremonies, one can attain His position, and because the Vedic ritualistic hymns become manifest from Him, one may attain His position and be... Yes, and one can attain His position because the Vedic ritualistic hymns become manifest from Him. He is devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahma, the most powerful entity within this universe. Brahma literally means the greatest. So he is devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead without deviation, and therefore, in one sense, he is not different from the Lord, as he's representing the Lord. Nevertheless, he should be worshipped not as the monists worship him, but in duality. One should always remain a servitor of the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Worshipable Deity. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Brahma, the form of manifest Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the word karma maya, obtainable by the Vedic ritualistic system, is significant. The Vedas say, Swadharma nishta sattas janmabi pumam vrinchatamiti. One who strictly follows the principles of Vanashrama Dharma for at least 100 births will be rewarded with the post of Lord Brahma. It is also significant that although Lord Brahma is extremely powerful, he never thinks himself one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always knows that he is an eternal servitor of the Lord. Because the Lord and the servant are identical on the spiritual platform, Brahma is herein addressed as Bhagawan. Bhagawan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But if a devotee serves him with full faith, the meaning of the Vedic literature is revealed to him. Therefore, Brahma is called Brahmalinga, which indicates that his entire form consists of Vedic knowledge. So he's composed of that auspiciousness of Vedic knowledge. Text 37. By the will of Krishna, the mountain known as Loka Loka has been installed as the outer border of the three worlds, Burlok, Bhuvalok, and Swalok, to control the rays of the sun throughout the universe. All the luminaries from the sun up to Dhruvaloka distribute their rays throughout the three worlds, but only with the boundary formed by this mountain. So there's a great mountain that is like a curtain that stops the sun from going on the other side of it. Because it is extremely high, extending even higher than Dhruvaloka, it blocks the rays of the luminaries, which therefore can never extend beyond it. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the final paragraph. This vivid description of how the rays of the sun are distributed throughout the different planetary systems of the universe is very scientific. Sukadev Goswami described these universal affairs to Maharaj Prickett as he had heard about them from his predecessor. He explained these facts 5,000 years ago, but the knowledge existed long, long before, because Sukadev Goswami received it through disciplic succession. Because this knowledge is accepted through the disciplic succession, it is perfect. The history of modern scientific knowledge, on the contrary, does not go back more than a few hundred years. Therefore, even if modern scientists do not accept the other factual presentations of Srimad Bhagavatam, which the modern scientists certainly do not accept these descriptions of what the universe is like, how can they deny the perfect astronomical calculations that existed long before they could imagine such things? So, although the modern scientific astronomical calculations can predict the movements of the planets, so can the Vedic astronomical calculations based on the Vedic astronomy. And these calculations have been done for thousands and thousands of years. So the civilization was very advanced. So even the modern scientists who don't accept the description of the universe have to accept the astronomical calculations, because they predict everything, the eclipses, etc., and the orbits of the planets. Modern scientists, there is so much information to gather from Srimad Bhagavatam. Modern scientists, however, have no information of other planetary systems, and indeed are hardly conversant with the planet on which we are now living. Prabhupada was very strong in his statements about these things. 41, just a few more purports. The various forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Narayan and Vishnu, are beautifully decorated with various weapons. The Lord exhibits those forms to maintain all the varied planets created by His personal potency, Yoga Maya. Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Sambhavam yatma mayaya, I appear by my internal potency. The words Atma Maya refers to the Lord's personal potency, Yoga Maya. After creating both the material world and spiritual world through Yoga Maya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally maintains them by expanding Himself in different categories of the Vishnumurtis and the demigods. So Krishna is maintaining everything. We wonder, how does everything go on? It takes so much energy, takes so much intelligence to maintain anything. If you try to maintain a clean room or the clean garden, a nice garden, takes so much energy. So who is maintaining the world, what to speak of the whole universe, just by itself, magically, automatically? So why don't we try to maintain our family magically and automatically? No, it takes so much work. So much intelligence, so much endeavor. So Krishna does all this maintenance, universal maintenance, through the demigods and through his personal expansions, the Purusha avatars, the Vishnu avatars, Karanadaksha Vishnu, Gavadaksha Vishnu, and Chiradaksha Vishnu. So he maintains, as Prabhupada explains, the material creation from beginning to end through these expansions in the demigods, and he personally maintains the spiritual world. And then the final verse and purport we'll read is the last verse and part of the last purport. All living entities, including demigods, human beings, animals, birds, insects, reptiles, creepers, and trees, depend upon the heat and light given by the sun god from the sun planet. Furthermore, it is because of the sun's presence that all living entities can see, and therefore he is called Drivishar, the personality of Godhead presiding over sight. And Prabhupada's purport. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Surya Atma, Atma Tveno Pashya. The actual life and soul of all living entities within this universe is the sun. We are dependent on the sun. He is therefore upasya, worshipable. We worship the sun god by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, Om Bhur Bhuvasva Tat Savita Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimayi. Surya, the sun, is the life and soul of this universe. And there are innumerable universes for which the sun god is the life and soul, just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the life and soul of the entire creation. So it is Krishna that gives life to the creation, just like it is the soul that gives life to our body. It is Krishna that gives life to the creation, and therefore he is called the super soul of the material world, because he is the life-giving force to this world. So Prabhupada has clearly made these points in his purport, that everything, even the demigods, the powerful personalities who are acting within this world, even they are dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Everyone is dependent on the Supreme Lord. We are dependent on the Supreme Lord. We may not be conscious of it, but we are yet, nevertheless, dependent upon him. And therefore, we want to make our consciousness aware of that, because appreciation is the first step towards love. And if we develop our appreciation for Krishna, how we are dependent upon him, how the universe is resting on his energy, then we can develop our love for him, and then we can leave this material world and go back home, back to Godhead. Okay, so we'll stop here. Tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we hear about the movements of the sun. I think, yes, 21. Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.